Tiens. So we continue reading Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 4, entitled The Appearance of Srinadara, verse number 10. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sa samrat kasya vaheto panduna mana vardana prayo pravisto gangayam annadrityadirat sriyam sa samrat kasya vaheto Pandunam manavardana prayo pravisto gangayam anadrityadirat sriyam sa samrat kasya vaheto pandunam manavardana Prayo pravisto gangayam anrityadirat sriyam. Anyone can chant, please? Sasamrat kasya vaheto dunam vadananam kasya vaheto anuna mana vardana prayo pravisto gangayam anidriti ratsriyam sasamrat kasya vaheto panduna mana vardana Pravisto Gangayam Pravisto Siyam Sasanrat Kasya Vaheto Anduna Manavaduna Pravisto Gangayam Annadriyadiratirasriyam Sarat kasya vaheto panduna mana bhadana prayo pravisto gangayam anadrityadirat sriyam Matthias please Sasarad kasya vaheto panduna manahardana prayo bravisto gangaya ratushriyan word for word saha hi samrat The emperor. Kasya. For what? Va. Or. Heto. Reason. Pandunam. Or the sons of Pandu. Mana, Mana Vardana, one who is enriches, one who enriches the family, I'm sorry. Praya Upavista, sitting and fasting. Gangayam, on the bank of the Ganges. Anadritya, neglecting. Adhirat, acquired kingdom. Sriyam, opulences. Translation in Purport by Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki. He was a great emperor and possessed all the opulences of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. Why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death? Kindly repeat, please. He was a great emperor and possessed all opulences of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. Why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death? Purport. Maharaj Parikshit was the emperor of the world and all the seas and oceans. Maharaj Parikshit was the emperor of all the world and all the seas and oceans, and he did not have to take the trouble to acquire such a kingdom by his own effort. He inherited from his grandfathers, Maharaj Yudhisthira and brothers. Besides that, he was doing well in the administration and was worthy of the good names of his forefathers. Consequently, there was nothing undesirable in his opulence and administration. Then why should he give up all these favorable circumstances and sit down on the bank of the Ganges fasting till death? This is astonishing, and therefore all were eager to know the cause. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Vatalesha Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamaste Sarasati Divi Gauri Brahmi Pachirine Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Pashtirte Satani Panchakalpatrivya Chakripa Sindhu Vacha Patitanam Pavane Vivasna Vivyunam Ramaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Arvaita Graha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So thank you everyone. Спасибо большое. My друг here, дорогой друг Dimitri. We continue in this wonderful reading of Srimad Bhagavatam. But before say anything, I beg for the blessings of Srinivas Vaishnavas, beginning with Malavakta Swami, and all the Vaishnavas present here, and all the ones listening from the internet. Because without blessings, without mercy, it's very difficult to accomplish anything spiritual. So thank you very much to everyone. So here we continue the sages with their questions posting to Sutta Goswami. There are some very important points here. And one I can see there, or we can see here, is about the detachment. So how is possible that Maharaj Parikshit was able to become detached to so much opulence and possessions? Because generally, attachment is very strong. So to give up anything is very difficult. We become attached for even very simple things. There is one story from Ramanujacharya. And he has many brahmachari disciples. And also one couple, Grihastha, they were very opulent, they were rich. And he hears some criticism from the brahmacharis because they think themselves they're very renounced. And to teach them a lesson, Ramanujacharya devised a plan. And he sent one brahmachari to the house of the grihastha couple to steal the jewelers, to steal something from them. So he saw that the wife, I don't know, do you know his name? Archita Prabhu, remember his name? No. So anyway, she was laying down, sleeping, and the brahmachari came to take jewelry from her size. And then she woke up, and so she realized what's happening, so she moved and turned around to the other side. So the brahmachari was scared, and he went to hide himself. So at that moment, her husband came to house, and she began to talk to him, and saying, "You think, my dear husband, that it seems that the brahmachari ashram is getting some economic difficulties because the brahmachari came to steal from the jewelers," he said. And he's saying, "What happened?" "Well, I woke up and I moved the other side so he may take the other side from my hands, the holy jewelry from my hands." So the brahmachari realized what happened, that actually even though they were in the family life, in the grihastha ashram, in very opulence, they were actually detached. And then he went to inform Ramanujacharya. Then he devised another plan for the brahmacharis. And then he sent one brahmachari to interchange the copings of the old brahmacharis. So in the morning when they woke up, they find out that they were not their copings, and the other brahmachari has their copings. So they start to fight among themselves for the copings. So this teaches the lesson that even what is a copying? Just a torn cloth. And the brahmacharis were ashamed to realize that they were attached even for some insignificant thing. So what to speak somebody who has great opulence, like here, like Maharaj Parikshit, who was easily give up all this possession. There are many attachments like a family life, houses, cars, and everything. They are so difficult to to become detached. So we, in the course of life, we accumulate few things, and sometimes we are worried if we will be able to become detached at the time of death. But a few days ago, after Mangalarti, Sovas Prabhu read a very nice verse from the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that I like it so much because it gives us some light. The verse in question was saying, Antakale tu purusha agate gata sadava chindyat asanga sastrana sastrena sprihandahe. This means that at the end of one's life, he said, Prabhupada was explaining, one has to be bold enough to be not fearful from death. And one become completed. Chindyat means cutting off. You see, asanga, the old attachment, sastrena, with the weapons of the detachment. Sprihandhe, sprihan means desires. Desires of all these bodies. So Prabhupada in the purport was explaining that because the materialistic people, they not believe in the existing of the soul. They working so hard just for the benefit of the body and sense gratification. And they become so attached, thinking that this life is all in all, and there is nothing after death. Also, this philosophy is very old, actually, as the creation is. There is one philosophy called Charvaka Muni. You know Charu means? This combination of two words. Charu means beautiful, and Bak means words. In the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, Kriti Srir Bak Cha Narinam. Kriti means fame, Sri means beauty, Bak means speech, and Narinam is woman. He means among women, he said, I am fame, beauty, and fine speech. So Charu means beautiful, and Bak means speech. So this means beautiful speech. Why is beautiful speech? Because what he said is beautiful for the atheist ears. They say, don't worry about it, anything. You just enjoy to full extent. Because in India, eating is a great pleasure. So in India, you cannot cook anything without ghee. So he says, you don't have ghee, you just buy ghee. But you don't have money, just borrow it or steal it. But somehow you have to have ghee. So. And then the question says, what about stealing? It's a sinful. It's, don't worry, he said. There is nothing worry about it, because after death, everything is finished. That's with Charvaka philosophy. And this is Brahmanic philosophy for all atheists. Sometimes the Charvaka actually was representing the atheist philosophy. Another thing that what he said is that don't believe anything you don't see. Just believe everything you see. And then I think it was Ramanujacharya or Madhvacharya, I don't remember quite well. He challenged Charvaka Muni. He said, okay, he said, let's say that you are worried because your wife became pregnant from somebody else. And then he said, why you worry about it? You didn't see it. So this is what's challenge. If you didn't see it, you don't have to worry about it, because you only believe what you see. So this is a challenge for Charvaka Muni. So in this historical of humanity, there appear so many great philosophers with different own ideas. The word philo means actually from the Greek words philo means love, and sophia means wisdom. Prabhupada explained that philosophy means to find out the ultimate cause. Philosophy means to find out about the truth. But all these philosophies, this philosophy is called anumana. Anumana means speculation. Anu means to follow, and mana means the mind. So when we follow the mind, we become to speculate. So this for Krishna consciousness is the supreme philosophy, because it's aparaushaya. It's not anumana. It's called shabda pramana, shabda brahman. Shabda means sounds vibration, and brahman means spiritual, and pramana means evidence. What is the other translation? Authority, right? So it's parushaya, come from purusha, that means men. Parushaya means it's not coming from men. So therefore, Krishna philosophy is free from speculations. There was one philosopher and theologist, French. His name was Vaisal Pascal. Maybe you heard about the Pascal wedge from the 17th century. And he's proponing one theory of probability. He was saying that in resume, if you believe in God and you die and you find out that God doesn't exist, there is nothing to lose. See? But if you don't believe in God, if you die and you find out that God exists, you have everything to lose. So this song atheist, they challenge this, that's what is called Pascal wedge, because it's you bet, it's betting. They challenge it is, yes, you have many things to lose, because instead you're working hard to attain to enjoy life. You deprive yourself for enjoyment, and then you die, and there is no God. Then you lose everything. You lose the opportunity to enjoy. But this statement or this theory is just for people who doubt. Therefore, this is called believers. They call those people who belong to any group of religion, they call believers. But in Krishna consciousness, we are not believers. We are truthivers. This word doesn't exist. I just made it up. Truth is come from the truth, because there is absolute truth, the supreme absolute truth, and we are part of the truth. There is no question of belief. We are completely convinced about the existing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. We are convinced about his Goloka Vrindavan, the place to perform his beautiful pastimes along with his associates, eternally enjoying. There's no believing this is the truth. Somebody may challenge you or may challenge us this. What about if you are wrong? So what will your answer? My answer will be, that is Maya. Because you are in Maya, you are full of doubts. Because you are under the jurisdiction of the material energy, there is nothing for sure in your mind. I would say, because the devotee of Krishna are situated in the truth, under the jurisdiction of the internal potency of Krishna, which is the truth, there's no question will be wrong. So that will be the answer. So this detachment actually is product of devotional service. It has two products, detachment and knowledge. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Pravyataha Janati Asu Vairagan Janan Janan Chai Bahatukan. So we don't have to worry about if we are not too detached right now, because we are doing things in order to perform devotional service. And we are taking care of the whatever is a family business or taking care of the body, for example. I confess I like to do exercise for myself because I get older and older, and those who are older, they know what this means. The body is full of pains. And if we don't take care of the body, it will be more painful. So we have to take care of the body in order to serve Krishna. We have to take care of all the possessions for the service of Krishna. And for this reason, attachment will come, especially at the time of death. We have to be ready to be completely detached. But detachment doesn't mean that one becomes irresponsible. People, maybe they get confused when we speak about family detachment. But that doesn't mean we have to perform our duty to maintain and care, complete care of the family. That's not the idea. Because the devotees understand that the family belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna, and whatever things, everything belongs to Krishna. And one has to, the devotee understand that the taking care of things is because he understands that Krishna is pleased. To have to take things, care of everything, and perform or prescribe duties materially and spiritually. So the sages also, there's another point here, they were want to hear what was the cause of the praya upavista. Praya means fasting until death, upavista means sit down. Why Maharaj Parish sit down fasting until death? Because once sometimes we perform activities, tapasya, for some benefit, either spiritual or material. But Maharaj Parish inherited all his kingdom, all his opulence from their grandparents. So he didn't need to do any tapasya for acquiring more material possessions. And spiritually speaking, he was Uttama, Bhagavat Uttama, first class devotee. Therefore, there was no reason to perform or tapasya also for advancing spiritual life. So the sages were eager to know what was the reason. So this will come in the next verses and probably next chapters. So another point is that Maharaj Parishi was quite young. He was a Kshatriya, from the same old families, Kshatriyas. And generally, the Kshatriyas in the Vedic times, they give up the kingdoms when they were old, and they pass it down to the descendants. But that's what they were surprised how Maharaj Pariki, in a young age, he gave up everything. That was another point, another question of the sages. Generally, the Kshatriyas, they go to the forest at the old age, or they go to the Himalayas. We hear the example of the Pandavas when they went to the Himalayas and they were dying there when they were walking. Because the Kshatriyas, they feel proud of the prowess and the strength. And they feel that lying down on bed, taking care of others, was kind of humiliation for them. So therefore they take this path of go to the forest and give up their bodies. We have the example of Dhritarashtra, how he was condemned by Vidura after the battle of Kurukshetra. All his sons were killed by Bhima, and then Dhritarashtra had no any family, and the Yudhishthira, being so kind, he took Dhritarashtra in his home and maintained him. So when Vidura came back from pilgrimage to Hastinapura, I think it was Hastinapura, right? He saw his brother Dhritarashtra in the home, very comfortable, in the home of the Pandavas, and he chastised him very hard, very harsh words for him. He said, "How is possible that you live in like a household dog?" He said, "Eating the remnants of Bhima." And he especially mentioned Bhima because Bhima killed his 100 sons, especially Duryodhana and Dushyoshana, who were very the pet sons of the Dhritarashtra. He said, "You're living like a dog." He said, "Why you don't just give up this? After all you did to the Pandavas," he said, "you're trying to kill them, and you're still just so shameless, living, maintained by them." So immediately the Dhritarashtra understood. He said, "Come with me to the forest." And then they left together to die in the forest. So this was the Kshatriya. This was the Kshatriya custom. Another thing that at that time, the kings, they call Rajarsis or Naradevas. Raja means king and Rishi means sages, because and Nara means men. Nara means men and Deva means God, because they were God on earth. These kings were full, were doing the will of God. The citizens were so happy under their administration because they were they feel completely protected by the kings. Nowadays, these leaders, presidents or whatever, politicians, they are Kali Yuga, they are son of Kali Yuga, they are Sudras. According to the history, the history of India, the modern history, they only record, they have record from the 700 BC. I think it was a couple centuries before the Nanda dynasty and the Maurya dynasty. But they don't have any record about these great kings, the Vedic kings. Therefore, they take all these stories as a mythology. And they saw this, but at this time, of the Nandas dynasty, all this time the king were degrading themselves. And therefore they saw that kingdom was no right administration, and they abolished the monarchy, and they introduced the democracy. But we can see still everybody is unhappy. They thinking that by science and technology they will be happy. But now society is in despair. Crime is increasing. You know, we see so many shootings. What was the last one in Las Vegas? And don't be surprised that very soon is going to be another one. This is the result of the atheist administration, because they don't know the goal of life. They don't know the goal of life. But these kings from the Vedic culture, they knew the goal of life, and their business was to protect and to save and to deliver all the citizens back home, back to Godhead. But now they think about technology. This technology is amazing how, because everyone wants to be happy and they want to get the perfect relationships, now they're inventing or creating robot women. So human being, male, men can marry with that robot woman. So they make it so special to please the husband. They cannot argue or anything. They are so faithful. I think there's one case, one Japanese man, he got married with a robot woman now. So this is it. We are looking for the perfect situation, perfect relationships, be completely happy. And this is the Bhagavatam is presenting. This is the sages are presenting. This is what the old acharyas are presenting. The devotees are presenting. That they only can have the perfect relationship with Krishna. We only can be happy with Krishna. There is no other way. Also today, I would like to say something about the Gita. The Gita. Today is the advent of the Gita. Krishna spoke today, right? The Bhagavad Gita, about 5,000 years ago, to Arjuna. This was, according to this statement, the Bhagavad Gita, this was the second time that Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita. The first time he spoke it to Sangha, Vivashvan. Imam Vivashate Yogam Proktavan Aham Avyayam Vivashvan Manuve Prahu Manuvi Isha Kave Bravit. That this science, he said, first spoken to the Sangha. And then Vivashvan spoke to Manu, and Manu instructed to the Shaka. Prabhupada explained that when Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Vivashvan, it was about 120 million years ago, and King Ishvaku appeared in Treta Yuga, I think it was the time of Lord Ramachandra, that was about 2 million years ago. So he said about the Bhagavad Gita has been in the human society at least 2 million years. The reason that Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita was to deliver the mankind. And this knowledge is receiving from parampara system. Evam parampara prata iman rayar sayu sakala neha mahata yoganasta parantapra. Because Krishna saw that the teachings of Bhagavad Gita were lost. There is a chain disciple succession, parampara, and it was, he spoke it to the royal, to the kings, because the kings were the kshatriya and the leaders of the society. He didn't speak this Bhagavad Gita on Sudra or Vyasa or Brahmana, Vaisya or Brahmana. He spoke to the royal kingdom because they are responsible for the protection and deliverance of the whole citizens. So today is a special day, as Savas Prabhu said, that we should at least distribute one Bhagavad Gita, and, or at least we can have some donation to buy Bhagavad Gitas today. And Sunday will we have the Yagya. And also as opportunity, we have opportunity to recite the Bhagavad Gita. It will take only 4 hours. Just be sure to bring a soft sitting asana so you can stay for 4 hours sitting down and chanting the 700 verses. I did it one time at least, I remember. And I feel so purified after chanting all this for 4 hours. It's amazing how powerful the Bhagavad Gita is. Even in Sanskrit, even in so many things we don't understand in Sanskrit, but at least the sound vibration, the language is so pure that has some effect in our consciousness and purified it. So, thank you very much. I will stop here. Is there any questions or comments? Yes, ma'am.
About the publication of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. Sit here. This is from Govindadasi's recollections of the first Bhagavad Gita that Srila Prabhupada printed. For those of you that don't know, I have a copy of what the book looks like. The very first Bhagavad Gita. Everyone's seen this. This was printed by Macmillan. And Govindadasi remembers, Srila Prabhupada worked very closely with his editor, Hayagriva, on Bhagavad Gita, as it is from 1966 through 1968. Hayagriva worked with Srila Prabhupada in New York in 1966, and he came from New York to San Francisco in late 1966 or early 1967 to continue working with Srila Prabhupada at the San Francisco Temple. Hayagriva was already at the San Francisco Temple when I first met Srila Prabhupada in early 1967. A year later, in early 1968, my husband and I were living in Los Angeles with Srila Prabhupada. His Gita was soon to be published by Macmillan. I worked on the cover picture for the Gita, which originally was a detailed drawing of the Virat Rupa, universal form of the Lord, with many arms and Arjun kneeling beside him. This is what Srila Prabhupada wanted. In spring of 1968, we flew to New York with Srila Prabhupada. We met with the publishers and editors at the Macmillan office to discuss the cover art and submit the cover picture. Cover art is a late step in the production of a book. This means that the unabridged Bhagavad Gita was already complete and ready to go to press in late 1967 or early 1968. We were in negotiations with Macmillan about the size and content of the book, and during the negotiations, Macmillan explained that they felt there was too much repetition in the book and they wanted to cut down the purports. Macmillan was paying for the cost of publishing, so they had the final say. Srila Prabhupada was not happy with this proposal, but he wanted to get his book in print, so he agreed to it. He hoped to get the complete book in print later. The fact that the abridged edition sold well demonstrated a viable market for the book. And thus, in 1972, Macmillan printed Srila Prabhupada's full, unabridged edition of Bhagavad Gita as it is. So, as I was reading this, I was remembering another story of how that came to be, that Macmillan published, that Brahmananda, there was an order for the Happening album in New York, and Prabhupada noted that the return address for it was in the Macmillan Publishing Company. And so he had Brahmananda personally deliver the package to the person who was in the mail order or something, some other. He wasn't even in the printing or publishing department of Macmillan. And so Brahmananda went there with the album and delivered it to the person that had ordered, and someone walked into the office and saw Brahmananda in devotee dress and said, "Do you have Gita? Do you have Bhagavad Gita?" And Brahmananda was like a little bit dumbstruck, and he said, "Yes, yes." He says, "My guru has Bhagavad Gita. He's just now writing." And so he said, "We need Bhagavad Gita to round out our section on religious and philosophy." So that's how Macmillan came to be the publisher of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. And in another world, before Srila Prabhupada appeared here, Sri Krishna said to Srila Prabhupada, the story was told by Bhavananda, he said, "You just go down there and write these books." And Prabhupada said, no, I don't want to go. It's a horrible place. And Krishna says, no, you just come here and you write these books. And Prabhupada again objected and said, no, I do not want to go. And he says, it is too horrible. And so Krishna told him, he said, "You just go and write these books and I will take care of everything." So we can see that Krishna has kept his promise to Srila Prabhupada of taking care of everything. He often said that these were the temples that were built by books, right? So I have one other comment. In Kurukshetra, there was a Bhagavad Gita conference in May of 1975, and Brahmananda and Shruti Kirti remember this event. There was a convention of sadhus, and everyone was invited to come and speak on Bhagavad Gita. And Srila Prabhupada was voted to be the president of the convention. And this had a flip side also. It meant that the president was the one that spoke last. Now, usually when Srila Prabhupada went to any convention or any type of event like this, he would speak first and then leave because he didn't want to hear what everyone else said. So he would speak first and then leave, and of course, the devotees were all with him and chanting and dancing, and usually that was when Prabhupada left, that was the end of the convention, because the whole convention followed the devotees out, you know, wherever they went. So the president of the convention in this case was supposed to speak last. And so Srila Prabhupada sat while everyone spoke. The monas, they wrote on their chalkboards, and the Mayavadis spoke what they had to say, and Gyanis, Yogis, and the Paramahansas, they all spoke. And at the end, Srila Prabhupada spoke, and he was very animated in his speech with his gestures and his strong voice. And he quoted shlokas, and the devotees could kind of get, you know, what shloka Prabhupada was quoting. They knew some, so. And Brahmananda says he was giving them the sauce. And so Srila Prabhupada quoted shlokas, and then he was saying, "Bhagavatam kicks out this cheating religion." And everyone was quiet. No one made any objection. And at the end, Srila Prabhupada said to the side, to the devotees, he said, "What's the use of these conventions, this talk of unity and peace?" He said, "They'll never achieve it. They have their own idea. And unless they surrender to Krishna, how can there be unity? Let's go." So they left right after the Srila Prabhupada spoke. And as they were leaving, Srila Prabhupada said aside, he said, "Do you understand what I was saying?" And Shruti Kirti said, "A little bit, Srila Prabhupada," because they knew some of the shlokas. And Prabhupada said, "Yes, I told them, everyone, speaking so many things, not once did anyone mention Krishna as speaker of Bhagavad Gita, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All activities here are useless." And as they were leaving in the car was leaving this Kurukshetra, going down the road, there was a typhoon that came in after them, and huge, strong winds and pouring rain, and trees were blowing down and everything. And Shruti Kirti says, and it was kind of right in back of them, and he says, all hell broke loose. So those are my two things that I have to say. Jai Srila Prabhupada, Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.
Class gets over, we gotta go find the microphone. Okay.